This is Wild Lives. I'm Mary Brophy. Ireland is home to a rich diversity of animals and plant life, but economic development, changing land use, and a growing human population is placing mounting pressure on these species. So how can we share these habitats with wildlife and protect biodiversity for the future? In Ireland, the focus has largely been on nature conservation, trying to maintain the wildlife we have, and assigning dedicated areas of land like the National Park here in Glenveagh for the protection of certain species. The day-to-day job of managing these environments, protecting wildlife and enforcing Ireland's wildlife legislation falls to one group of men and women, the rangers of the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
We've driven up from the castle. This is an old right-of-way running through the middle of the park, and you can see we're a lot higher up now. We're nearly at the level of the mountains.
Robbie Miller is the ranger here at the 40,000 acre Glenveagh National Park. Spend any amount of time with Robbie and you'll soon realise that he cares deeply about wildlife and holds a real affection for Glenveagh. I'm joining him today on one of his regular patrols, and he brings me first up the mountains to give me the lie of the land.
You can see everywhere 365 degrees, almost all bog, and that's what most of the park is. You know, it's the upland blanket bog. If you look over there, you can see Dooish. That's one of the higher mountains in the park. And just more to the east here, Muckish. And just over the crest of the hill there, that's the main spine of Glenveagh. And this is one of the kind of upland lakes, Loch Inchia. You know, there's quite a few of these. They're really nice, isolated, kind of landlocked lakes. The park is 16,000 hectares. You know, so it's a big chunk of the county, but most of that is, you know, what you see, wilderness. It is the wilds, and I think there's a guy done some studies here back in the 70s, Telford, and he worked at, there's a line stretching between the southwest end and the northwest end of the park. It runs for 30 kilometres. You know, without meeting the road.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere else in Ireland you can get that straight line without seeing anything. So, you know, by that definition, it really is the wildest bit of landscape on the island.
On the island, yeah.
Looking here up the glen, the sun's shining, and it's actually my favourite time of year, you know, when the bog turns to that nice golden colour and the leaves are just turning. Glenveagh does have that magic to it. You know, people come here and, you know, we've seen different people down the years, and, you know, it really has that magical quality associated with it, you know.
Past the castle, across the lake, a small hexagonal shape of trees catches my eye. They stand alone in stark contrast to the surrounding short vegetation. But how are they here?
Deer numbers have been anything up to 1,000 in 1986. They cause a lot of damage to the trees. But one of the ways that you can help the vegetation get back is to build these enclosures to keep the deer out. And most of the park forms an enclosure, a 45-kilometre deer fence to keep them in.
So basically, while it's one big large enclosure, you're now creating kind of islands that the deer can't get at, and this is one of them. You have the vegetation recovering here, and we have trees growing and everything in this little pocket.
Yeah, what you're looking at is from 1977, that's how the vegetation changes, you know, when you don't let the deer in.
So just under 40 years and you have that.
If there was no deer in the place at all, it would look more like that. There'd be a lot more heather and a lot more trees. But, you know, it's quite a complex situation because undergrazing is nearly as bad as overgrazing. You know, you find it a lot in natural systems. You know, you go away and you read the books and you think you know everything. And then when you try it on the ground, natural forces have a different
You need a certain amount of management.
I think we're always continually trying to imitate natural systems, you know. You know, like the deer, where you have population expansions and contractions, you know, there is actually good and overgrazing, and there's good and undergrazing, but it's kind of the balance between the two, you know, in different sort of time scales.
Were you always interested in working with wildlife? Like, how did you decide to get started on this?
It was really a bit of a fluke, as I say, because of my mum's connection with Donegal. I just felt the pain, and I heard all the stories from her and my granddad, you know, so I had to go and see what it was like, and I'd kind of get involved in this type of work in Scotland and the Highlands, just by pure, I think, more or less a fluke of being unemployed in the streets of Glasgow. You know, I come from quite a poor end of the city, you know, a lot of deprivation and poverty, you know, the usual things you get in inner cities, you know, and nobody ever coming to Glenveagh ever comes back and feels worse for it, you know. So I'm a great believer in getting people from the cities or wherever they come from, you know, to come to places like this and to enjoy it to its full potential.
And did that happen to you? Did it mean that much to you?
Well, I truly believe so, you know. It really did have that effect on me.
We trek into one of these woodlands, and Robbie explains the complexity of managing nature at this level.
There's only about 100 hectares left, and, you know, that's only a tiny proportion of the total area of the park, 16,000 hectares. The way it is, it's largely undergrazed, you know, but we might have to look at the future of, you know, letting the deer have access again, because it's back to this balance of nature, you know, that because when there was a high deer population here, there was a really diverse ground flora. That guy that was telling you about, he'd done the study in the 70s, he found there was more species here in a 50 metre square than there was in the Killarney woodlands, and that was because of the high deer population.
Right.
So when you take the deer out of it, that species diversity was starting to decrease. There was an initial burst of tree seedling recruitment and establishment, but that only continued until the high cover species came up. And if you look over in places like over there, you'll see
across the far side of the river,
it's not so evident here because there's a lot of mosses, but if you look in certain places, you'll see there's plants come up. Oh, there's one of them there, the wood rush. The deer particularly like this one, so it's like it's just like a hairy, broad-leafed grass. But it's a really good indicator for deer grazing, because they really seem to prefer that. So that sort of grows up in big, dense tussocks, along with other things like millennia grass. So you end up with a blanket that keeps the trees from getting in again.
Yeah.
So you might have solved one problem, but you've, you know, created another sort of secondary one.
Yeah.
How are you
doing? Not bad there. A lot of the old rangers have just retired. There used to be four park rangers at one time, five, but, you know, I'm getting to be like one of the extinct species that I'm trying to save. So I like to think about places like this as being sort of a natural catalyst that, you know, when we used to do the guided walks, we haven't done them this year for the first time, which I think was a great shame. But, you know, it was a great, you know, I miss that interface with people, because, you know, you get a chance to kind of plant a seed in their head. You know, and they might get back home and think differently about their garden or do things in a certain different way. You know, so there's that side to it as well.
So where are we coming to now, Robbie?
We're just heading across the river here, and you see that this is the old ford. And even if you just walk to the top of this path, you get, you know, one of the most fantastic views, you know, looking down at the lake towards the castle. But just be careful there when you're crossing over. Keep your socks tucked in. This is the kind of pit territory. As you can probably see, not many people come through here. It's kind of well overgrown.
There's lots of brambles anyway.
Yeah, that's the bracken. Yep. Yeah, well, it's kind of this wee bit here is just like lowland bog. There's a lot of purple moor grass and rushes and bracken. But once you move onto the slopes, it sort of dries up a bit. You know, the bog's quite deep here, but once you move onto slopes, it gets a bit drier. So you'll start to see more stuff like, you know, the different heathers. And
just as we were standing here, there was lots of birds coming out through the bracken. What kind of wildlife is this place supporting?
Well, I mean, blanket bogs in comparison to woodland, there's something like 70 different breeding bird species found in the park, and the most notable ones, of course, is the golden eagle. Like there's peregrine falcons up in the cliffs, there's merlins in the trees, Greenland white-fronted geese, and a reserve just attached onto the park, Loch Barra. The red-throated diver, of course, is another big one. You know, it's the only place it's found. It's basically a seabird that comes to breed in lakes. So that's kind of the bird side of things. I mean, the other notable thing about Glenveagh, people won't be surprised to hear this, but there was two midge species found new to science. I mean, as if we didn't have enough midges here, you know. Yeah, well, you've most of the other mammals, pine martens, stoats and badgers. But you know, the one people talk about is always the red deer. They're the ones that people have the most chance of seeing. This time of year it'll be kind of the rutting time, while they're, you know, at the business of sorting the
business end of things.
Yeah, the business end of things. You know, what we do in discos basically.
Yeah.
They're at it on the hills. But it's a great time, you know, if you're ever out at night, or even, you know, and it's a full moon and the rut's in full swing, and you know, you hear a big mature stag, you know, claiming his harem of hinds. You know, it's the most, you know, I was at a few nights like that. You know, you just hear this big guttural wail of the stag. You know, it's like, and it kind of echoes through the hills, you know. It really is one of those special sights, you know, that everybody should try and experience at some point.
You are the only ranger left on 16,000 hectares. Is it lonely?
I do miss the old guys. They were, you know, Seamus McGinty and Larry McDade. They were kind of two legends and characters. You know, when I came here first, you know, I was kind of used to characters and legends coming from the streets in Glasgow, and the banter and all the crack going on, you know, and I do miss all that, you know. There is some of the old staff a bit, but it's not like the early days in the early 90s were literally, I mean, we did work hard, but we tried to have a good time as well, so there was plenty of banter going on, you know, and it is kind of lonely now, you know. I do miss the, you know, my old friends, and, you know, but you still see people a bit, you know, now and again. A lot of the times I would be out my own, you know, I'd be mapping rhododendrons, or, you know, supervising the contracts, or looking at something. So, but, you know, I've actually come to enjoy those moments, you know. Sometimes a wee bit of peace and quiet is good.
Mountains are wild areas.
That's Lorcan O'Toole.
A mountain without an eagle is a little bit funny, almost unnatural.
He's with the Golden Eagle Trust.
We felt that they would add a little bit of the original beauty to those landscapes, a beauty that people had forgotten about.
For nearly 100 years, our skies have been empty. Golden eagles went extinct here in 1912. From the 1780s, a rapidly expanding human population had driven them from their habitats. They were hunted and poisoned and finally died out. In 2001, Lorcan and his team released six golden eagles here in Donegal. We're hoping to catch a glimpse of one pair that have established in the area.
Well, we'll try up Glenveagh itself, up the glen, up past the castle, and we'll go around the edge of the park. There are a couple of territories in around the Derryveagh Mountains. You know, they're flying freely. They could be one spot one day and 20 miles away the next day. Well, here now there's just a pair of birds that have been here since 2007. They'll really hold an area down as far as Lough Barra, up towards Church Hill, and maybe across to Tarman, and then back down maybe over to Errigal. So it's a kind of a big square, and that's a wide range. And over the last 50 or 60 years, the amount of food on the mountains has decreased.
So when you say there's not enough food on the mountains at the moment, what does that mean?
Well, I suppose we'd be looking at what condition the heather is in on the mountains. Heather is prime food for animals that the golden eagles actually eat, which is hares and grouse. But if you look around here, you know, you can see some areas where the heather is quite strong, and other areas where the heather is relatively poor. And again, in some areas there isn't an awful lot of native woodland on the hill. And though the eagles wouldn't hunt in woodland, woodland would provide a lot of potential prey items, such as crows and maybe conceivably winter flocks of wood pigeons and things like that. I would say, as a consequence of getting rid of a lot of birds of prey in Ireland, we still see the effects of that today. It's almost invisible, but there's a huge number of crows and foxes in the country. It's very difficult to explain. When something's missing, how can you say, you know, there's a problem? But you can see it all around us, where some birds like grouse and other ground nesting birds are in serious trouble, partly because of habitat loss, but definitely also because of increased predation. Our food chain is really way out of sync of where it should be. There are numerous examples around the world where bringing back one animal can help numerous other animals. So philosophically, I'm quite comfortable that predators are part of the landscape, and they are part of Ireland's nature.
Golden eagles are an apex predator. That's one that sits at the top of the food chain. It's been missing now from our environment for decades. But actively restoring a predator back into an ecosystem is a type of conservation that can and does raise concerns. Like what the impact of that predator might be on the humans who live and work in this landscape.
I have to say that the Irish Farmers Association in Donegal were extremely measured. I remember going into several meetings very nervous, and I told them if they wanted to block it, they could block it immediately. But I said maybe they could first of all seek the advice of Scottish farmers, because there was a lot of rumour and gossip about the impacts eagles could have. We've never ever said that eagles don't occasionally take a newborn lamb. More likely it's a sickly lamb, but let's be blunt about it. An eagle can occasionally kill a lamb. And I remember one individual in particular from Inishowen who went to the trouble to go through the Farmers Union in Edinburgh. He was given a number of telephone numbers of maybe 20 individuals in Scotland. He phoned up 14 individuals, spoke to them at length about the eagles and the impact on their sheep farming. And he conveyed that message to the Donegal farmers. But he came to the realisation that, you know, there might be 10, 15,000 foxes in Donegal. There might be 20 to 30,000 hood of crows plus ravens in Donegal. And we were talking really about 20 to 30, maybe 35 golden eagles in the county. So when you put it in that context, it's very small. And interestingly, since we started our projects, I'm convinced that the eagles have killed more predators than we have released. You know, they've killed at least 60 foxes, they've killed at least 20 badgers, they've probably killed 40 to 50 crows and ravens. In South Donegal, the farmers are happy to see the eagles because they've found that they've lost less lambs to hooded crow attack, where they might take the eyes or the tongue of a newborn lamb. That's not happening as much now with the eagles established a presence in that area, because the hooded crows aren't as numerous and they're just not as active. They have to be very wary and have to look to the skies above them. Which wasn't the case 10, 15 years ago. I'm just stopping here near the Glenveagh waterfall. It's a lovely clear day, blue skies above the mountain ridge or the skyline. And I'd often stop in this vicinity to see if eagles are kind of flying over the ridge. Very often the first sign of an eagle in the area, you might hear some ravens calling as they fly toward an eagle, maybe to mob it or harass it a little bit. So I can't see any eagles here today, but...
Why would this be a particular spot for them? Why would they be coming in to the waterfall here?
There is a bit of a breeze, and I'm sure the breeze would get slightly stronger if you went higher up. So that breeze would be hitting the mountain edge and going over the top of the cliff. And those updrafts, the birds would be soaring on the wind under, giving them elevation, an easy lift. So you'd often see them spiralling and circling in those invisible air currents.
No sign right now.
Not yet, no, we'll move on another little bit.
It took a lot of consultation and planning, but in 2001, the first six eagles were collected in Scotland under licence and brought back to Donegal.
And I remember at the time a local individual, a farmer from the Rosses, came out with his grandson and met us at the airport, and I heard a journalist interviewing, "Why did you come here?" And he says, "I wanted to welcome the eagles back to Donegal," which I thought was a fantastic kind of a thing to say, because, you know, if you speak to particularly the older generation, they remember hearing stories as children of where the last eagle nested and how their parents encountered them. You know, people have come to the park expecting to see eagles almost on tap. They are a wild animal, and it's impossible to tell where they'll be from day to day.
Which I kind of take hope from that, you know, that they're not here is to be on show, that the project has succeeded if they are a wild animal.
You know, when you do see an eagle on the skyline, whether it's in Glen Bay or whether it's over by Errigal or if it's down in the Bluestacks, you do know that's a wild animal that's living in the mountains.
61 golden eagles have been released into the wild since 2001. The current population in Ireland is thought to be between 20 and 25 birds. Despite being protected, at least three eagles have been lost to poisoning. Other losses are thought to be due to persecution or limited supplies of suitable food. Since 2007, though, 10 chicks have been successfully bred by two pairs here in Donegal. And last year, for the first time, one of those wild chicks bred. Unsuccessfully, but an important milestone nonetheless in this epic restoration story.
Overall, we think there's only room for maybe about 50 to 60 pairs of eagles, maybe up to 80 pairs of golden eagles in Ireland. But partially as a result of the Donegal project, which started in 2001, white-tailed eagles have been released in Kerry and red kites have been released in Wicklow in 2007. And that was built on kind of the how the Donegal project worked and how the farmers bought into the idea and how the tourism lobby in Donegal felt was beneficial, because it raised the profile of Donegal, which has a beautiful landscape. I've seen golden eagles in Scotland, you know, during my working time there, and they're fantastic and I love them. And I came back to Donegal and I was looking at the Donegal landscape and I've seen eagles again, but it was only really when I met Donegal people who had spent their lives in Donegal, and they were saying, you know, I've come to this landscape, and all of a sudden there's something completely new yet so perfect and so natural in the landscape. And it was really by listening to those people that you knew, yeah, this was a moving part of the landscape.
Alive in
the landscape, yeah. Bringing the whole landscape to life. And that's what was missing. But we couldn't see it. It was nearly like a lost language or something of that nature. And we don't want to be over romantic about it, but these mountains do deserve to have soaring eagles.
That's it for today's episode. In our next episode, I go on the trail of perhaps Glenveagh's most iconic wild creature, the red deer. And Ranger Robbie Miller explains how one invasive species threatened to destroy the ancient woods of Glenveagh. Join me then for Wildlives. Wildlives is produced and edited by Neil Boyle. It is a Hollybrook production for Highland Radio, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, with the television licence fee.